Okay, Boker Tov, good morning. Welcome to the, what I like to call the spring semester. I love using the word spring, because it's sort of, even though the winter has not really been a winter, that's kind of worrying, but whatever, I guess we're getting through it. We're in January, we haven't had the snow yet, so I shouldn't say anything. Sorry. Delete. So this couple of shiurim that we're going to be doing now right through May, please God, and we'll put out a notice in advance every time. I've called it Something Old, Something New, because what we're going to be doing is obviously looking at some what I call newer topics. Today, advertising, which is obviously a very big issue coming up to the Super Bowl. I mean, what bigger issue could you have than what the halftime show is going to be about? All this language doesn't mean a thing to me. It's just my grandson has told me everything about what I should be looking out for next Sunday evening. No idea what he's talking about, but he told me to say the halftime show, so I guess everybody knows what I mean. Next Sunday, I think. And the next year, for instance, we're coming up to Purim, and I thought there's a strange rabbinic statement that will come back in the Messianic world, and there'll be all the Chagim will be abrogated, will be let's say cancelled, no Pesach, that sounds kind of interesting, but Purim will still be around. Now the question is, what does that mean? Alright, so that Shiur, please God, in 4 weeks time, I think it's February 23rd, I think it is, that will definitely be something looking at a statement of the rabbis and trying to, you know, delve into what they're really getting at. We'll also be doing one session on photocopying, on copyright, because that's a very serious problem to this very day. Pirating and all the stuff that goes on, and I have a little story about Art Scroll, something that I had an interaction with them 25 years ago when they started coming out. I was quite shocked, but I guess they made a point. And we'll do a little bit also Yom Yerushalayim, please God, we're coming up to that at the end of May, trying to sort of, you know, mix a little bit of the old with a little bit of the new. That's the plan. So I hope that will grab your attention, and please, you know, get everybody to come. Just to mention, our Wednesday morning learning, we're still in the middle of Megillat Esther. I know it's the daytime. It's complicated. People are working. I appreciate that, but the shiurim are online. And Megillat Esther is a wow. I've started teaching the course at YU. And this semester, for some reason, I've got a very interesting collection of girls from Beis Yaakov, of all groups, Prospect Park and Denver, you name it. They're coming from all the Beis Yaakov, all in my lesson. And I gave my intro like I gave here, and they're sitting, their mouths are gaping, right? You know, and I said, what's the problem? So they said, well, I wish our teacher would have told us this. You know, we've learned the Gilad Esther over how many periods of years, and they hadn't even started from the first basic analysis of what's going on. So I was glad to enlighten them, and it'll be an interesting semester with that group of girls, I'm sure. The point of view of what we're doing today, advertising, we all live with it. Okay, we all know about it. As I said, this whole thing next week, the amount of money, I don't know what it is now, an ad on the halftime show, right, is millions, right? I mean, it's just literally millions and millions of dollars. It's mind-blowing. And, of course, everyone gets very excited about that for a reason which I can't really understand. In the end of the day, it's trying to sell you something that you probably don't want. You know, we've got enough Diet Colas in our life. Why do I need to see another ad to sell me Diet Cola again? If we drink the stuff at all. The interesting thing is, and this year is very, very fascinating, that when one looks for precedent, because what we're really saying is that does Judaism have an attitude to all of this stuff? Do we have an approach to advertising? Do we say something about advertising? So you'll say to me, well, I never saw advertising in the Torah. I never saw anything. Well, you can sort of argue there are allusions to announcements of things that are going to happen or whatever, more like prophecy. But advertising is something which is very, very interesting when you think about the concept, the translation of the word into Hebrew. In Hebrew, advertising, the word translation is persomet. All right, if you're listening to the radio, Israeli radio, if you try and listen to the Hebrew one, achshav persomet, they sort of stop in the middle of everything and they announce, now is an advert. All right, as if you didn't realize, but they always seem to make an announcement on the radio. They still do it like that to this very day. Persomet rings a bell in my head because I know in the Talmud and I know in the Halakha there is a concept called persume Nisan, Pirsut Nefarsayim, to announce and to publicize the miracle. Good morning. And what is so interesting, and what is so fascinating with all of this, is that when you just look at the principles of announcing and publicizing the miracle, you have many of the principles, I understand, of advertising in that halakha. It's just so amazing. I'm talking around this. I have no experience in advertising, and I'm not that sort of. It's not my scene. But you read about it, and you read about the. There's a big chokhmah that goes into it to try and persuade you to do something, essentially, which you may either be indifferent or possibly even don't want to do, and you've got to get somebody to do it to buy an object or whatever. Look what we got on the first page here. Absolutely amazing. The laws of Hanukkah. So I'm talking about advertising, and I'm talking about the laws of Hanukkah. Look how this works. So Shulchan Aruch says very clearly, this is the first Hebrew section on your page, Madlik v'holich ad shetichla rega min ashuk. When do we light the candles? Till people leave the market. Right? So that doesn't mean that you light it all night. It means that till a certain point when the stores close. So in this country, we're talking about maybe 10 or 11 o'clock at night. In Israel, a bit earlier than that. That's when you can light the candles, certainly with a bracha on Hanukkah. Shehu kamo chatzi sha'a, the halacha says this is half an hour. Sha'az of rim v'shavim v'ikub b'suin. In other words, half an hour before the market closes, where people are still running around, till that time when the market's closed, there is pirsume nisa, pirsome. They're advertising the miracle. And you look at the next section from Shulchan Aruch, and Mishnah Berurah says, in the smaller print, you can light the whole night. Happened to me once. I got back to yeshivas a long time ago. Very slow train going up to the north of England. Instead of getting back at 9 o'clock, got back at midnight. The boys were sitting in the Beit Midrash and the Rosh Yeshiva was around. I said, can I light candles? He said, do it without a brocha. And that was the correct decision. And he says, Mishnah Berurah says, till night, till morning, you can still do it with a bracha if people are awake, so that people know, people hear about it. If everyone's asleep, don't make a bracha on the candles, because there's no publicity going on. You're not publicizing the miracle, everyone's asleep. What do you do? You light without a blessing. This is what we do. The concept of timing, okay? Advertising, we know, is all about timing, getting the timing right, getting that moment. I am next week, this show between the first, what is it, the second half and third half, second quarter, third quarter, whatever. I'm talking language, I don't even know what I'm saying. I wrote all this down because my grandson told me what to say. So whenever it happens between that particular moment in that game, which is being watched by who knows how many millions of people, prime time. It really is prime time advertising, and that's why the ads are really expensive. Where do we learn the concept of prime time? From, in Jewish law, we've got the Hanukkah. It's amazing. You've got to make a bracha only at prime time. That means when people are around.
This isn't relevant to this, but why would you light candles if you're not saying a bracha?
Again, just for the purpose of keeping them. It's a bit similar to counting the sefirot without a bracha. You're doing I'm going to say the yeshiva expression, the chefzer shel mitzvah. You're keeping the body of the mitzvah going, all right? But you're not really doing it properly. So ideally, you should do it earlier than that, right?
Is considered one mitzvah.
According to some. With that question, you have to adjourn, gut the road to the kollel, and you'll be there all day. Because they'll tell you all about that.
Not relevant.
And I don't think it's relevant, but you'll have a great time. I'm telling you, this is a classic, really big topic, which I'm trying to avoid because it's not for now, but it's a great subject.
No,
good question.
At the end of the spring semester.
All right, have a look at this. The next thing, the next Hebrew quote, you can't put it too high. Location, right? Again, always interests me when I'm on the I-95, the turnpike going up to New York or back, the height of the billboards. Okay, very, very fascinating, that they're within purview. Again, I don't know whether this is a great thing, because when you're driving, you're supposed to concentrate on the road. And it worries me, especially when you have these flashing announcements, of things going on and all the rest of it. And I'm sure, unfortunately, accidents have happened.
Don't text.
Sorry?
It says don't text and drive.
As you're driving. Yeah, this is strange. It's like a real strange logic in that concept. But again, what do we see from Hanukkah? Just the interesting thing, location. We know that not only is it about advertising and when you advertise, but where you put the ad. Right? You know, TV, radio, etc. And it's fascinating. And of course, the idea also, the last point, the idea that it should be, as many people should find out about it. That's why we light the Hanukkah in the shul. Because we're not doing the mitzvah of Hanukkah when we light in the shul. But it's the idea of getting the word out there. Getting as many people to recognize and to be aware. And as I've said on the principles here, timing, location, wide exposure. All right? And that, again, so go figure. You've got the laws of Hanukkah. All of a sudden, you've got within that some ideas which we would very readily expect to find in any book which is teaching us the basics of how to go about advertising an object. I think that's very, very interesting.
And so the Jews have been then advertising for
forever.
For 3,000 years.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I'm not surprised about it.
The reason I say that, I remember in school we learned about the Pickwick Papers.
Oh, yeah.
In England.
Yeah.
And
Dickens.
It was a little news item that the guy published. And then eventually people used to put little notes in there what they're selling.
Yeah.
I always thought that was the beginning of advertising. Now I'm learning it goes back 3,000
years. We've been around 3,000 years. I've got another shiur that talks about education. Everybody thinks it started with the Education Acts in England, 1870, and here probably around the same time. You know, for the proper educational system, etc. Open Gemara Bava Batra, page 20, 21, round about that, 20b, I think it is. It says, Yeshua ben Gamla, he lived 2,500 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and he started an educational system. Right? Not Rebbe the way they have in the Chadorim, but he would actually have a teacher with classes. Some classes would be too big, so you need a teacher's assistant. It's all there in the Gemara. It's the whole system of what we recognize as standard educational practice in school was done by the Jews 2,500 years ago. It's incredible. Right? So it doesn't surprise me that we're into this. What is so interesting with all of this is, again, you know, when it becomes a modern concept, we think to ourselves, well, you know, my religion is Shabbos and that time, and my modern, my day-to-day stuff is whatever it is. But here you see the combination, right? The blend of essentially what is a very religious topic, publicized in Hanukkah candles, and yet the principles coming out of it are principles which we can apply in this very wide field. I always find that fascinating. This year was apparently based, I saw a copy of what I'm giving you, was given at YU, I think, by one of the rabbeim there. And again, very interesting how they took these halakhic dimensions and they became so practical. And I love that stuff. That to me is Torah Mother 100%, the whole concept of it. All right, we'll go on. And I'm not going to talk about Mishpacha magazine and not having women in the adverts and all that sort of stuff, because one of the changes, I have to talk about Mishpacha magazine for one reason, because my daughter-in-law is connected, her uncle is one of the editors there. But whether you read this magazine or not, one of the things that if you ever pick up any of these what I call super from magazines is the quality of advertising. Not necessarily the content. You know, at the end of the day, gefilte fish is gefilte fish. You know, what are you going to make it more glorious than it really is? But the way it's being advertised, the gloss is staggering. And there's a real effort, I think, in a lot of these things, both in Israel and this country, to make a kind of professionalism in the way these things are presented. I find that very uplifting, even though some of the content of the magazine is unfortunately quite the opposite, but just the way it goes. You know, I leave you to make up your mind about it. All I can say is the pictures are good. The really wonderful photos in all these magazines. They're really, they've got some good photographers working for them. Look at this topic. We'll move on a little bit, because if we've got these principles, let's understand a little bit more about how the advertiser has to think in terms of advertising the article he's trying to sell. And one of the issues we have, which is fascinating, is the issue of maritime. Maritime means what is going to be the perception of the advert. Is the perception going to be something which will be negative or something which will go against Jewish values? I'm talking from a Jewish perspective. And therefore the advert will then not necessarily become what we would call a kosher advert. Or do we have to worry about that at all? the end of the day, is there a concept of worrying about the perception of what the advert, how the advert is perceived? And I'll just show you the famous Gemara. It's Gemara Shabbat. It's a number of places. The bottom of the page. Amar Rav Yehuda Maran, Kol Mokom She'osu Chachamim Bnei Marit Ayin. The whole concept of Marit Ayin, not to be seen or being perceived to be doing something wrong. That is, Afilu B'chadrei Chadorim, even if you're in a closed room, you still got to do the right thing because it's in the eyes of God as well as in the eyes of man. Just to time out a little bit about Marit Ayin, because I really believe, when we talk about Jewish law, I believe in the concept of evolution. Jewish law evolves. I really believe that. And one of the places it's really evolved is this law of Marit Ayin. Tell you what happened. I was on a plane to Israel. Oh, good Lord. It must have been nearly 50 years ago. That's really scary. And 1976. Well, 45 years ago. So they started at that time, Elal was serving kosher food. That's fine. And then they brought around the coffee, which was also fine. And then they had this little packet of something. I'm not sure what it was. And they said, halav, something in Hebrew, or whatever they told me in English. It's not real milk. I said, what do you mean? So they opened it up, poured it in. There I've got coffee, which looks like coffee and milk. And I've just had my chicken meal. And I'm saying to myself, there's something wrong with this picture. What are people going to say? I'm sitting with a kippah. Guy next to me sees me drinking this cup of coffee with milk. Just had my meat meal. And he'll say, you know, what sort of religious Jew are you? So the answer is that the concept which we're talking about, being seen to be doing the right thing, has changed. And nowadays, nobody will think twice about it. I remember they brought out mock shrimp things on the plane. And it always comes from Elal. It's interesting. Now it's coming from caterers as well. They do mock this, mock that. There's now a fish you can buy, which is supposed to be exactly the same as crab. There's a mock bacon, believe it. I mean, everything is available.
We just had this conversation because my son is starting a cooking class at Kohelet in ninth grade.
Oh, really?
And he wanted to do cheeseburgers with mock beef, you know. And the question is it inappropriate somehow in a Jewish day school to have, you know?
It's a great question. Should you be seen to be doing that? You know, the standard question, you're driving down from the Catskills, if you ever do such a thing, and there's that, what is it called, that place where they done mincha on the way. And it's at McDonald's, you know, and you need the bathroom. You know, so should you go in there or not go in there? The answer, of course you go in there. You know, what you're worried about. If you need the bathroom, you need the bathroom. But people are worried, and it's interesting. I was walking on the Upper West Side. You know, I was working at Barnard in Columbia, and I saw somebody sitting in a treif restaurant, I have to say, with a kippah, and it bothered me, right? Because he wasn't just sitting there waiting for somebody. He was, you know, he was having a meal. So I wondered to myself, why would you put on the kippah sitting in the place, which is clearly not kosher? It was, I don't know what they were serving there, you know, I don't even want to think. But it was strange. So,
well, you're getting at a point, we don't know what someone else is doing.
Correct.
We're criticizing somebody else.
Yeah.
And we're worried about how people will criticize us.
Yeah, we're worried about...
It's a dilemma.
It's a dilemma. Perception is a dilemma. And it changes. I think this whole thing has changed over the years. I'll give you one example and I'll take your question. One example, I was at an OU meeting. And the only time I ever went to a kashrus meeting, because it really drove me crazy. What happened was that they were talking about all the new stuff coming out for Pesach. That was the year they brought out Pesach pizza. Right? You can now go to Mendes in town and get a Pesach sandwich. Not matzah sandwich, bread sandwich. Right? It's made with potato, it must be inedible. It tastes like cardboard, but the reality is it looks like a bread sandwich. Now that, again, I say to myself, but Pesach, I don't care about the business thing. At the end of the day, where is this concept being seen to be doing the right thing? And when I raised it with the OU, I got so stonewalled, you know, I just couldn't understand it. Their attitude was, you know, this is a business decision, whatever, and ever, but come on, guys, there is a kind of halachic dilemma here, right? Being seen to be eating something like that on Pesach, there's a problem. And I don't know. As I said, the halacha is evolving. Certain things are now becoming accepted. Other things are, you know, now we're not to be seen to be doing certain things which once upon a time, you know, what I call the short sleeve problem, you know, now that to see a woman with sleeves which are questionable, people start making sort of comments and fuss and whatever. Once upon a time, you look at the pictures of the weddings, my parents' generation of wedding, every woman was wearing short sleeves. Could be the frumpest wedding, you know. I mean, it was just one of those things that perception, and these perceptions change. And I don't know what to say. I it's one of those strange concepts. Maritana, I just got it off my chest. I feel better now about that. I don't get it.
We used to have dinner dances here at Sansevieria.
And that's it. And how is these things perceived?
So, but Maritana can also go to an extreme, right?
And boy, can it go to an extreme, and it really is.
And it does go, though, because I've seen it many times.
All I can say is I always quote my Rebbe, Gershon Lopkin, who quoted Rock, one of the real great poskim who lived in London, who said to me that there are four sections of Shulchan Aruch. Everybody studies, you become a rabbi. But there's a fifth section that you need to know. It's called common sense. And if you don't apply common sense, you're really in trouble. That's what he taught all the time. He always would say that, boy, you know, when you meet a halachist who understands that principle, he's a gem. He really was a gem. Influenced a lot of people.
We had a friend in Rochester who owned a lot of Burger Kings.
Oh,
and
right.
Every time he would open a brand new Burger King, make it kosher.
Oh, really?
First night only.
As a fundraiser
for the day.
How
school.
Interesting.
And you should see everybody would come and eat those burgers. We didn't have the mock cheeses there. It was just burgers.
Right.
From Burger King. With kosher meat and the fries,
and the whole, just one night.
One night.
It was worth it for what? Well, I suppose it's opening. It's all brand new.
You're
not worried about day two of people coming in and assuming it was still
right.
kosher. That's a problem.
No, it was one day,
that's
one
a problem.
Night only,
that's a problem. Sorry, Eric.
Is there a difference between ordering coffee from Dunkin' Donuts where they sell not kosher stuff, but everyone knows you go there for coffee?
Right.
McDonald's, and say a more upscale place where people rarely would go there just to order a coffee.
Correct, and it is a difference. I admit it. I'm in Dunkin' Donuts twice a week in New York, and the only thing in New York you have is the heksher, which, as far as I'm concerned, is meaningless, because I never see a rabbi in there to save his life. Does he ever go to that place? Never. But once the heksher's in the window, everyone feels more comfortable about going in there and having whatever they have. And I ask every so often, this place is kosher. Oh, yes, they have no bacon, nothing. But can you really rely on it for other food? I don't know. I'm not 100% comfortable with it, but you know what? It is what it is. That's the way it works.
Here, does Maris Ayin have any...
Sorry.
Is it linked in any way to the concept of mutzah? Something that's really not, but you shouldn't do it because...
It is. I say it's a gray zone. That's all I'm going to say about it. Okay. It's a gray zone. And mutzah as well has evolved. Certain elements, things were... once upon a time, and now are less so. You know, people have become less strict. Other things become more strict. These are halachot which really do go from generation to generation. It's fascinating. And if you talk about evolution, halacha, it's a good thing to realize that halacha has evolved. It's not static. It really isn't. And if you make it static, then you're making a big mistake. But what what the great decide of halacha has to do is to be sensitive to that variation. And it really is tough.
In Sons of Israel...
Yeah.
A little more than 50 years ago, there was big, big discussion in the board of directors that almost became violent. It went on for many meetings.
Wow. I can't even begin to imagine.
With threats. Threats.
Talking about.
And... Rabbi Rothman stopped it by saying the final decision is Maris Ayin. What they wanted to do may be kosher, but you can't do it
because
it looks bad. That was the final decision.
Yeah.
But this thing went on for for about 9 months.
What was the issue?
I'll tell you later.
that were all intrigued, but I guess I understand that.
We were meeting in a classroom downstairs, the board of directors.
Wow. No business like shul business. All right. Please turn over. I want to leave that subject to one side because I can see it's...
The time you thought it was only now.
It's touching. Oh, no. No, it started with Moses in the desert and it hasn't changed since. I'm Kasheyar. We know about that. Look at this bait and switch. I don't know if this happens anymore, but I was thinking about Black Friday a few weeks ago, which is now a concept that's gone around the world. What amuses me is my sister in London said, what am I doing on Black Friday? I said, what is Black Friday? You know what it is? Because they don't have Thanksgiving over there. So how can you have Black Friday if you don't have Thanksgiving? I don't understand it. But it's become an issue. They really do call it Black Friday. And in Israel as well. It's strange.
And Cyber Monday.
Well, I don't know. This bait and switch is very interesting. You'll get people into the store with the offer of getting something very, very cheap, or, you know, like ridiculously cheap. But, of course, when you got there, they're already sold out, right? In other words, even the people who line up all night and sleep on the street to get into the store, you would get in, the TV, which was $500, is now $50, but, of course, it doesn't exist. I don't know if they can do that today. I don't know if it's been made illegal, but this was a practice which clearly, from the point of view of halakha, is very, very difficult. This is an advertising style of representing goods and making it attractive, but of course the idea is get people in the store and then they start buying other things.
Bait and switch.
Bait and switch. And that's it. That's the bait and switch. Now look at it. What is the basic issue? Look at on the second page, the flip side of what we're reading, Gemara Bava Metzia. Gemara talk about this. It says, Ma'atam Alama Hin said it. When it talks about measures and weight, it says it should be a hin. A hin is a measure. And tzedek means correct. It should be a correct measure. And why does he use the word hin? V'alo hin b'chlal eifa. And a hin is a small part. In other words, he's talking about pounds and ounces. So why talk about ounces if you're saying that, you know, talk about the bigger weight. Why talk about the smaller weight? So what the Gemara is actually saying is the word hin has got another meaning. And the Gemara says, Ela lomar lecha. The Gemara says, it tells you, Sheyehei hein shalchad tzedek. The love shechad said it. Your word is a word. I have wonderful, wonderful Rebbe in London, Rabbi David Cooper. Was a he knew Shas by heart. Rebbe, Rav in my shul, and I asked him. I said, "Rabbi David, well, you know what in the Haim in Lithuania? You know his background was from Lithuania. Though he was born in London, but his parents came from Lithuania." I said, "Did you have such a thing as frum Jews? Did you call Jews frum?" He said, no. He said, the word frum wasn't used by the Jews in Yiddish, spoke Yiddish, because frum was the gala, was the non-Jew, right? The priest. He was frum. The German means, you know, frum means religious, but that was for the non-Jewish clergy. I said, so what did you call religious Jews? He said, the real McCoy, the guys who really respected, were called Erlicha Yiddish, honest Jews. That was the ultimate accolade of someone who was given the praise of all praises that he was an honest Jew. Boy, I don't know what to say about today, but I'm going to start crying, but I'm not going to do it. Listen to this.
Before what, the OU, that used to be the standard for kashrut. So if you were to walk into it, I mean, they didn't have mashgichim all around.
It should still
if
be.
Somebody there. Said he's an Erech and Yid. You would walk in.
You would walk
say
in. Yeah, my favorite is in Jerusalem. The butcher in Jerusalem that everybody bought from. Right, which was known as Hacker. What a great name for a butcher, right? And no, there was no thing on the wall. There was no right. It was at the bottom of Shmuel HaNavi. You probably know the butcher I'm talking about. And don't you remember? Oh, it's a long time ago. And Hackers, everybody bought there. It was super kosher, but no Hechsherim, because you relied on the Bala boss. You knew he got his meat from a good source and everything. Why? And now somebody told me a few years ago that they made a wedding in Queens, 5 mashgichim. Because to make everybody eat, you've got to have the local love, and then you've got to have the Brooklyn crowd, because they've got to have their rebbers, and then you have the Lakewood crowd, and their rebbers. By the time you finish, the mashgichim costs more than the wedding.
It's
absurd. It's absurdity. And we're just, and you're so right. And what we've got back to here is this concept that your yes should be a yes, a no should be a no. That's really what the Gemara is telling you by using the word hin, because the word hin comes from the word hen. Hen means like in Hebrew, ken, right? Ken v'lo, yes and no. And that's what the Gemara is saying, that your word should be a word. So doing this kind of bait and switch stuff is clearly, from the Jewish point of view, a problem. And we go in, if you look, go down the page, and we're going to sort of just look at these examples very quickly, it leads into a whole discussion on this big topic of Geneva Da. There's the idea, lo tignol, the Torah says don't steal. We all know 10 commandments, right? A friend of mine said, he once gave a speech, a rabbi, he said, he got away with it. He said that God made a little mistake. It was one of those weeks where there was somebody who was up for going to jail for probably during the Madoff or something even earlier than that. And he said, God made a mistake. He said, Lo tignol, he said, was put into the Ten Commandments, don't steal. It's a big mistake. He said, if he'd left it to one of these rabbis in B'nai Brak to write a book, and in the footnote, it would have said that some say that you don't steal because people would have written books about it. People would have been so frum about it. It was a very controversial comment. Just think about it. It's really, unfortunately, the way the religion is going. Small print, missing the big print. It's a problem. Listen to this, all right? I probably should delete that comment when I made, but I'm not going to. Gemara says in Chulin, famous Gemara, the Amar Shmuel, very interesting way the Gemara puts it, about Geneva Dat. Geneva Dat meaning to cheat somebody, to steal, literally to steal somebody's mind. Meaning to say something which you know is going to mislead the other person. Because this is what we're doing, bait and switch is what it's all about. So listen to this, look at this Gemara. The Amar Shmuel, Gemara in Chulin, page 94. And again, the sources are so interesting. The rabbis are really aware of this stuff. You'll say to me, he's not Jewish, who cares? I can cheat him, I can be this awful landlord and don't ask what's going on, even today. Probably more so today, it's really worrying. The reality is, according to Gemara, absolutely forbidden. You're not supposed to do this stuff. And Gemara brings stories. Now listen to these stories. Story is wonderful. Gemara continues, second line of the Hebrew. Tanya, Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir used to say, Al yisahev adam lechaveiro lisod esna. We're all tempted to do this. Issue an invitation. You know the guy's not coming, but you invite them anyway. You know he's going to a wedding or he's out of town, but you say, come for me for Shabbos, but you don't really mean it. What do you want to do? V'yodea bo she'ena so'ed. You know he's not going to come. V'lo yarbelo b'tikrovot v'yodea bo she'ena mekabel. Right? Or you want to give a certain person extra benefits, but you know he'll never take it. So what you're really trying to do is to cull favor which is undeserved. Right? And again, you can see the application in advertising when it comes to a point where maybe you're doing something here, culling favors which are not deserved, trying to get something which is not necessarily, you know, correct. It's not done in the correct way. You're really doing what is essentially geneva dat. You're cheating the person's mind, as it were. You're trying to influence the person. The Gemara says, not allowed. And not only that, they used to have a situation, somebody came, this is great, alright, nowadays we bring a bottle of wine, that's a very traditional thing to do. In the old days it was a barrel of wine, imagine, yeah, you know, schlepping a barrel to somebody's house to for Shabbos, that's a pretty heavy item. This is what used to happen, and the Gemara talks about a case where someone opened barrels of wine in honor of the person coming, and the person came and saw, whoa, he's opened a barrel of wine for me, incredible. The reality was, he just sold it to the person down the road and he had to open it anyway. So you're gaining goodwill in a situation which was unacceptable. You know, you're doing stuff which is essentially cheating the person, making the person think, the other person think that you're doing him a favor when you're really not. Look at this final one, the fourth paragraph here where it says, Chulin Tzadik Dalet with two dots. Ki Hod Mazutra. This is an interesting case. That is a case where there's a rabbi called Mazutra, Berei de Rav Nachman, the son of Rav Nachman. Nachman was one of the great rabbis of the Talmud. Havaka Ozel Misichro Lebe Mechus. So he was on a trip from one place to another, right? From Minsk to Pinsk, as they used to say in Poland. Berova Rav Safra, there were two rabbis, Rova and Rav Safra, Havaka Otu Lesichro, and they came to this place where this rabbi was leaving, right? So Mazutra was on his way out, and these other two rabbis were coming there. Pogo Adodin, they met each other on the way. So of course, the rabbi leaving thought that this was a committee coming to say farewell. Two rabbis are meeting him. Very nice, thank you so much, you realize that I'm leaving. And it's a farewell committee. Alright, he deluded himself. So who's Savar La'apehu Dekatu? He thought they're coming to, you know, to say goodbye to him or whatever, just to wish him well before he leaves the town. Amar Lahu. So he said to them, he was so overwhelmed by the gesture, he said, Lavala Rabbana Litroch, why did you bother so much to come and meet me? But after Kulai, such big rabbis, you left the yeshiva and you came to see me. They've got a problem because they realize that they gained a favor which they didn't deserve. They didn't come to see him, they were coming there for another reason completely. So Amalei Rav Safra, one of the rabbis who had come to the committee came and said to the original rabbi, Mazutra anan lo have yadina de ka'ati ma. Right? We didn't know that you were actually coming this way.
That's because, not nice though.
Well, they want to be honest. Let me finish the story. They said, e have yadina, because had we known, tefei have yadina, it would have brought more rabbis with us. That's what they were saying. Not two rabbis, we would have had 10 rabbis. If we knew that you were coming this way.
Now, good also?
He's being economical with the truth. Let's put it that way. So the other rabbi said, listen to this. Such a good story. Amalei Rav. So the other rabbi of the original two said, "My tam amrit le'ochi." Why? what was the guy's name? Why did you, Reb Safra, why did you, Reb Safra, tell Mazuch, why did you tell him that, you know, you would have had 10 rabbis and not 2 rabbis? What's not true? So he said, Dachalishte ledate, he said, because I could see he was shrach, he was upset. And if, you know, I hadn't explained to him that, in fact, because he expected 10 rabbis, not 2 rabbis. So I explained to him that had I been able to get more rabbis to come and greet you, I would have done that, quieted down the other guy. So the other guy was really deluding himself. This is what the point is being made. Listen to this. Surely you're misleading him by saying that 10 rabbis could have come instead of 2. Why are you misleading him? The Gemara said, no, he's deluding himself. He is not to, they are not to be blamed. It turns out that the idea is that this rabbi was deluding himself, thinking that more rabbis would have come and only 2 rabbis came. So what we're trying to say is, and this is so interesting, look at number 3 at the bottom of the page. If most people believe something, then the advert achieves undeserved goodwill, as with the story, because with the story of Mansochi was the person, he was deceiving himself. To which we say, okay, we can sort of play around with that and kind of find a justification if he's deceiving himself. What happens if everybody's being deceived? Then clearly that's not acceptable. Right? Turn over the page. He deceived himself. This was not a problem because it was an individual who made a far-fetched assumption. He thought 10 rabbis were coming and only two came. And, you know, he was placated in the end. If this had been the assumption of a majority of people, as many adverts try to get the sort of the majority of people to realize, this is good for you. Right, the classic one I didn't mention here, but it's so interesting. They used to have an advert for coffee. Some of you may remember this. I don't remember it in England, but you may have had it here. This coffee is particularly good because it's mountain grown. Turns out all coffee is mountain grown, right? But this one's particularly good because it's mountain grown, right? I don't know if they put that on the coffee anymore, but once upon a time that was the selling point. So what are you doing with that? Are you wrong in saying something which clearly is trying to sell a product by making it look better than all the rest? Or are you saying, look, people will delude and kind of deceive themselves anyway, big deal? So the answer is, really, it is a big deal. From the point of view of the way that we look at it, we want to be as honest. This is really the paradox of the whole shiur. Honest advertising, does it really exist?
So going back to your Black Friday,
it's a big interesting thing, yes.
Black Friday example, the majority of the consumers know that their chances of getting what they call the doorbuster deals are very small.
Yeah.
But it's a game, they do it anyway, so they're playing along knowing that the odds are against them.
And the odds are against them. So then people are deceiving themselves, so it wouldn't be such a problem because of what we learned with same principle, Mazuchi deceived himself, right? And we don't seem to have a problem with him making that assumption, even though the other rabbi had a conscience about it. Yechaliot, and it's an interesting thing. So you can see the debate can go either way, right?
I'm worried about this guy who felt insulted when they said, no, we didn't know we came for another reason.
Yeah.
That's really a delicate thing.
It is a delicate thing.
If the guy feels enhanced because he thinks you came,
yeah,
why bust his...
Yeah, why bust his balloon?
There's got to be a way to be truthful without
being
deflating this guy.
Yeah. So all I can say is, it's a very big subject, and my favorite discussion is the Hillel and Shammai discussion, because it's on the same point. Hillel and Shammai had a big debate when you go to a wedding, and the color is there, and let's say, not the most beautiful lady that you've ever seen. Not the shenster color, right? So What do you do? Do you say color kamot shehi? Bet Shammai say, you say, whatever it is, you say the color is as she is, and maybe she can lose a few more pounds, and you know, you go into that discussion, and it's a horrible discussion. But Bet Shammai say, you've got to be honest. Bet Shammai, you won't invite to a wedding. They didn't get many invitations, you can imagine. Bet Hillel, it's an interesting gemara. Bet Hillel say, no, color na'e v'chasuda. She's always beautiful, and she's got the ways of, you know, manners, mannerisms, etc., which are kindness. So the rabbis say, but Hillel, you're not telling the truth. He said, no, for the husband, she's the one who is the only one in the room.
To look at it through his eyes.
And through his eyes. It's so interesting. So they already have that debate in that Gemara, famous discussion, whether you're honest with this description or not. And Shammai were brutally honest. It was very difficult to live with that kind of, you know, situation. Like in Israel today, many differences between Israelis and everybody else that I've come across, and one of them is the brutal honesty, sometimes, maybe all the time, of Israelis. They will tell you what they think. And very often it's kinder to the person not to say what you think. But this is different society norms. We kind of hide it, cover it up a little bit, whereas, in certain places, like I said, in Israel, they will come out with it direct. And you'll say, better to be honest, but sometimes, no, because you're playing with people's emotions. So it's a big debate. It's an interesting thing.
I had a thing that happened to me when I was 16 or 17.
Yeah.
It still is riveted in my mind.
Oh, really?
I made a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
To a young female cousin. She's a second or third cousin to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said something that I thought was truthful. And I've regretted it every day of my life since then.
Yeah, huh? Yeah.
It turned out it was an insult.
And it was an insult.
I was innocent. I didn't realize at 16 that you can't tell the truth.
Yeah, and
never ask a woman if she's pregnant.
It's a life lesson, and
it just tears me up on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah, I talk about this in college. This is one of the classes I give in college. I talk about this because it's really important that part of the college experience is to learn, in life that you've just got to be careful what you say. In certain circumstances, you can say one thing with your friends, but not necessarily in business or whatever. You've got to be careful. But here we're saying, look, there's got to be a bottom line. And what we're trying to establish is that from these sources, you can see that we are concerned about the bottom line, right? We are concerned that there should be a certain level of truthfulness, and certainly a certain level of, if people want to deceive themselves, you can push the envelope a little bit, but generally, let's try and be as, let's use the word kosher, as we can possibly can. Turn over the page, just want to finish because we're running out of time. My favorite American phrase, BOGO, buy one, get one, right? Freebies, so-called freebies, or jingles, right? Who was doing the jingles? One of the sitcoms, he wrote Jingle, I forgot which one it was. The most extreme, of course, is the whole use of, sort of using sexuality to sell stuff, and clearly from a Jewish perspective, we have a lot of issues with that. But as I said, you look at these now, what I call the so-called religious magazine, they certainly won't use sex to sell anything, but the high standard of professionalism of the ads is really quite amazing, to their credit. Are you allowed to have a lost leader? Let's just talk about that very simply. Look at Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, right? Open up the Code of Jewish Law, and here's a story. I think many young people starting Gemara, they learn this Gemara in Bava Metzia. Mutar lechen vani lechalei kleo v'guzim l'tinokot. You've got a lot of kids around in the street, so that the guy selling candies will give out some freebies, right? Kedei lahargilam she'ignuvena, that all the kids will come, and then of course they'll come next time and they'll start buying his candies. And you can do that. You could even have a sale. You can sell things cheaper. Right? Kadesha yikna bimena, that people will buy it from you. So this is mentioned in Jewish law. And even if you've got the whole marketplace going crazy, we're selling it for $10 and you're selling it for $5, how can you do that? And they start making a whole thing. The answer is that, as the Shulchan Aruch seems to be saying quite clearly, business is business. So I think that they recognize is a certain concept. We have it today, lost leaders, right? In London, it was always a big deal. What was the price of matzah for Pesach? My father, one of the things when he retired, he worked in retail in that sort of world, and so he always liked to compare prices. So he said, told me whenever I visited, this store was the cheapest for matzah. All right, I wasn't particularly interested at that point. It was 2 weeks after Pesach. I was happy to forget about matzah, but he always had to tell me about it because that was, again, something interesting, this idea of putting up that particular item as what they call a lost leader, so you get everybody coming to the store, and of course they'll buy all the other Pesach stuff at what we can only describe as slightly, if not more than that, inflated prices. So it's the way it goes. I'm going to just finish with this book because you can see there's no absolute answer to this, but there is a theme which is running through this. We recognize the human dilemma of trying to get your product sold, but at the same time, we're wanting a certain amount of responsibility within the way that the product is presented. And here comes a real issue, the issue of misleading the buyer. If you're coming along, misleading the seller. If you as a buyer go into a store and you start trying on all the dresses, all the jackets, and all the pants, and all the rest of it, and you're not intending to do anything except have a good time and try on these clothes, then halacha has got something to say. Look at this final comment, obligation of the buyer. It's a Mishnah in Bava Metzia, and it says, "Kashem she'ona b'mekka." You're not allowed to cheat in business. Mekka mekka kach ona b'devarim. You're not allowed to cheat with words. Lo yom alo. You shouldn't say to this, the buyer shouldn't say to the seller, "But kama chafetze? How much is this item?" For who ain't a ratzel likach? You have no intention of buying it. Im hayah bal tshuva lo yom alo. If a person is, this is more delicate. A person has become a BT, right? Has changed their lifestyle, become religious. Lo yom alo zechor ma'asecha rishon. Don't start saying, "Well, remember what you used to be." That would be very insensitive and not the thing to say. Imhu ben gerim, and if he's a son of convert, lo yom alo zechor ma'asecha rishon. Remember what your fathers did. You know, your grandfather wasn't Jewish. Don't say that. Shenema begeir lo tonev lo tichotzeni. You don't oppress the convert. It said, you've got to be careful what you say. But this idea of window shopping, which we tend to, I don't know, the royal we, if that's the way to describe it. I don't like shopping anyway. I don't do it very much. But some people, you know, they will have this tendency just for the thrill, if you want to call it that, of trying on.
Today, when they intend to buy it online, but they exactly want to see it in a store.
And then that's where I've just written a big question here. And I wrote it on the page, online challenge, because that's exactly the point. And I gave this shiur 20 years ago, and if anything, things have got more complicated because of online shopping, which I don't even want to talk about. It's one of those things that if you want to get a rabbi, seriously bid, my beard's too short, if you want to get a really seriously bearded rabbi to come in and talk about this type of challenge today, online shopping, it'd be a very interesting shiur, right? So Rabbi Willig, someone like that who's sort of, you know, sort of keeps abreast of the halachic literature, which is writing about all of these things. These are not things which are beyond the realm of halachic discussion today.
But one of the main differences today, and I don't know if there's a distinction, but most shops are not owned by single proprietors.
And it's,
go in, it's a corporation.
Correct.
So you would say,
and they're not Jewish.
What? Yeah. So you go I'm going to look at this item and buy it online.
Yes.
I'm not hurting any particular person.
And therefore you may...
Is that discussed?
According to what we're saying over here...
You're hurting all of the stockholders of this corporation. Every single 10,000 stockholders are all being hurt.
But who says that you have to buy something more expensive when you can get it for cheaper?
Yeah,
that's true.
No, that's okay. Yeah. You can't go in and
that's
try
true.
It on.
Yeah. But
that's
you're using this person.
Using that. Yeah, you're using
it's a window
it.
Shop.
The brick and mortar place spent money to bring that thing in. They're paying interest on that money.
That is true, but,
and they're
but
also
there's
paying
always
taxes
a chance that when
your
you're
community.
Going...
Yeah. And they're employing your, you know, people who live in your community. So they're providing a benefit to the community.
Correct.
I saw this when we went shopping for wedding gowns, that they say you can't take pictures.
Oh, that's for sure.
You know, they don't want you to do this, and use their time and their beautiful gowns as a, you know, way.
In Lakewood, when you buy clothes, you can only return them the same day.
Yeah.
Like you can't because they're...
They know that's what...
Because they're afraid you're going to wear it to a simcha
and then bring it back. Yeah, which...
It's really
wrong. You know, I mean, the bottom line of all we're saying here is that this...
Tuck it in, Jack.
We're back to the fifth section of Shulchan Aruch, common sense and application. It should be for some, and it isn't.
It's
Geneva, it really is. You're right. I want to finish with the Rambam because, as always, Maimonides has got something to guide us in life. He says, look, I know we're talking about behavior in terms of shopping and advertising, whatever, but he says a bigger issue here. This final paragraph. Rambam says, right, don't be two-faced, he says, about with people. That in the heart you say one thing, and in your mouth you say something else. Be honest, be sincere. And what is it about? And particularly when it comes to deceiving people, don't do it. And you say, oh, it's only it's a non-Jew, it's not really such a problem. It is a big problem. On the contrary, it's a chilul Hashem when you do it with non-Jews, even worse. Ketzad, he says, for instance, Lo yimkol anachri basar nevela. Think about this one. You're selling a non-Jew, non-kosher meat, but he thinks, as they do, kosher is better. The OU is very popular because they think it's a better product. So bimkom basar shchutah, and he thought he was getting kosher meat, and you sold him non-kosher meat, and not allowed. Below minal shel meta bimkom minal shel shchuta, or some part of the animal, if he thinks he's getting a bargain or getting something which is kosher, which is not, and you're not allowed to do it. And here comes this one we saw before. Below you say bechaveiro sheochel eso, don't issue an invitation. And the person won't come. Or try and do favors to someone knowing that he won't accept it. All of this is culling favor, goodwill, with intent to deceive. And again, the same thing we saw before with the barrels, opening up the wine, you have to open them to sell them, taste or whatever, you say you're doing it in his honor instead of selling, and the person will become, as it were, feeling goodwill towards you when it's undeserved, because he thinks you're doing it in honor of the person, the guest. And then, similar ideas. Listen to this. Mila achad shel pitutev shel geneva dad asur. One word, says the Rambam, forbidden. Wow. This is a high standard. Ela svat emet. This you've got to have on the wall somewhere. It's got to be, the word should be the word of truth. Veruach nochon, and a spirit of correctness. Velev tahor, and a pure heart. I can't end the shit better than this. Bechol amal vahavat, whatever one does, whatever one works. Apply that in principle, and as I've made a note to myself, a life philosophy not to misrepresent. We are challenged so much with misrepresentation, fake news, and all the rest of it. We're living in a very challenging time. The requirement to behave in a moral way at all times, both as a seller, which we've spoken about, but also, I think this is a chiddush, as a buyer as well. Interesting things to go and think about, I hope. Something challenging, something to take away. Bezrat Hashem, as I said, a couple of weeks' time, we're doing something completely different, a little bit about Purim, but a very unusual topic. Bezrat Hashem, on February, I think it's the 23rd, 24th, the notice will go out. In the meantime, everybody, have a wonderful week. Enjoy the weather, it's beautiful. And thank you for listening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.